Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
My name is Elizabeth Person, and I am an illustrator and designer based in Everett, Washington. And I am a watercolor. I use watercolor and ink, and I love to do informational art. So that looks like a lot of maps and a lot of infographics, which is organizing information visually. So I'll do like all the presidents or different types of apples or maps of regions or countries or areas. And my relationship with Holden began in 2015 when I was thrilled to be an artist in residence during the winter from February to April. And that time was really meaningful for several reasons, but one was I got to try on doing art full time. And so after my experience at Holden, that's what I've been working towards. And just this next month, I'll be able to transition to doing art full time. So Holden has been really instrumental in my career and in my life. So as a map maker, my process is I always start with a grid. I draw a pencil grid on my paper and I find multiple maps to refer to. And I began drawing. And so within that grid, I draw freehand. And then I spend a lot of time researching what I'm going to draw and doing a lot of time pre-sketching. And then the fast part is actually the painting that goes very quickly because a watercolor is a very quick medium. So one of the first challenges I encountered as a map maker is the curvature of the earth. And when you take, you know, the earth as a ball, it's a globe, and you flatten that out, you have to account for that curvature. So every map is a little different. And the bigger area that the map covers, like, say, North America, the more maps are going to deviate from each other. So this began a real interest in maps for me. And I have become a student of maps and of getting to know a place. So what I'm going to share today is about the significance of maps in our own lives, maybe in ways we don't think about them, and then some interesting facts about maps. So first of all, I have a few books that I love and I would highly recommend to listeners. One is Map Head by Ken Jennings, and you may recognize that name because he won Jeopardy for about 6 months in a while ago, and he's written many books, and he's an extremely intelligent man, obviously, and he accounts a lot of his ability to remember details to his love of geography because he ties everything to a place. And so his book, Map Head, is wonderful. Another book I'd recommend is Rebecca Solnit's A Field Guide to Getting Lost. And she takes a much more poetic, philosophical look at place and of navigation. So I'm going to quote from some of those books today. This is another fun book is called The Map Thief by Michael Blandin. And this is a nonfiction book that's about a kind of a thrilling tale of a map buyer and dealer gone astray and started stealing maps and selling them. So in that book, it has a wonderful definition of a map, which I'm going to share. And he says that the very point of a map is to recreate an area in miniature, allowing us to envision, navigate, and control our world. And I find that that's part of the human fascination with maps, is it gives us a lot more control and understanding of where we are, for better or for worse. And then another interesting thing about maps is they are actually older than language. Humans were using maps long before we knew how to speak. And a third thing about maps is that they get us beyond our place in the world. And I can't think of very many people who, so often you go into a place and there's a map framed on the wall and it's like a magnet for people. They want to hear the story of why, or they want to tell you where they've been. And a great quote from Ken Jennings in Map Head is, almost every map, whether of a shopping mall, a city, or a continent, will show us two kinds of places. Places where we've been and places we've never been. The nearby and the far away exist together in the same frame. Our world undeniably connected to the new and unexpected. We can understand at a glance our place in the universe, our potential to go and see new things, and the way to get back home afterward. I think that everyone carries maps inside of them unconsciously, and it's also, everyone has a way that they orient themselves in the world, and I'm really fascinated by this idea. So something I'd love for you to do is I'm going to ask some questions and try to think of where you were. I'm going to ask you some where you were questions. So where were you the last time that you saw a beautiful sunset? Another question, where were you when you met your closest friend? Where were you on September 11th, 2001? And where were you when you left a part of yourself somewhere? So I'm guessing that you had an answer for those questions, and it was very related to a place. And even though the place might not have been significant, for example, where you were on September 11th might not have been significant unless you were in New York City, but it's how you remember a moment. And we so often associate our memories with a place. Or if you take some time to recall a place, it can bring back a lot of memories. For example, try to think of your childhood home. Think about the layout. Think about where the tree you climbed was, or where a particularly meaningful piece of furniture might have been. And if you take some time to relive a space, so many memories will come back because we humans are so spatially oriented. I wanted to talk a little bit about orientation, how we orient ourselves in the world. So something I've noticed as a map maker is north is always up, but that's completely arbitrary. And in Maphead, Ken Jennings calls it a northism. And he says I don't know why we always have to orient ourselves north. But in fact, he says, there's no magical reason for our hemisphere to be at the top beyond our insidious northism. Medieval maps were usually aligned so east was up, which is why we use the same word, orient, to mean both the east and also to spatially align. NASA's famous big blue marble photo of the Earth from space had south on top when it was taken, so the agency flipped it for publication. So I think it's so interesting that our assumption is that kind of as north is up. Everyone kind of agrees on that, at least in our hemisphere. But it really doesn't have to be that way. It's a choice we've made. It's an orientation that we all have and that we all bring to a situation. And then in A Field Guide to Getting Lost, Rebecca Solnit brings up kind of an exception to this. And this is a tribe of indigenous people in Northern California, the Wintu. And they don't use the words, this is quoting from her book, they don't use the words left or right to describe their own bodies, but they use the cardinal directions. So Dorothy Lee, a woman who researched them, says, when the Wintu goes up the river, the hills are to the west, the river to the east, and a mosquito bites him on his west arm. When he returns, the hills are still to the west, but when he scratches his mosquito bite, he scratches his east arm. Rebecca Solnit continues and says she was enraptured by this description of a language and behind it a cultural imagination in which the self only exists in reference to the rest of the world. No you without mountains, without sun, without sky. I think that's a really beautiful example of a people who have oriented themselves in a different way, and it's very related to the place that they're in. Lastly, something about orientation is this idea of getting lost, which is kind of the definition of getting lost, is you don't know where you are. You lose your orientation. You lose the map inside of you. And there's a great quote by Daniel Boone, and he says, and he's an early American explorer. He says, I was never lost in the woods my whole life, though once I was confused for 3 days. And the idea of explorers, some of the explorers in the past, they didn't really know where they were going or where they were headed, but they wouldn't really consider themselves lost because they were exploring. It was intentional. And Rebecca Solnit says, explorers were always lost because they'd never been to these places before. They never expected to know exactly where they were. Lost was mostly a state of mind, and this applies as much to all the metaphysical and metaphorical states of being lost as to blundering around in the backcountry. So lost is kind of a relative term I've learned in my studies. Another thing about maps and orientation is so much is changing, and that started as far as our map technology, and that started in the mid-50s with the Sputnik, the first satellite that was launched, and now we have such amazing detailed information of our planet. In fact, before I came, I went into Google Earth to see how close in I could get to Holden Village, and it's scary how close in I could get just using my computer. Anyone could see where all the chalets are, and it's just an incredible detail, an incredible amount of information out there. In fact, Google Earth's goal is to do 1 pixel per inch. And that's how detailed they want to map the Earth, which is pretty phenomenal. So the way we navigate has really changed. And of course, a huge example that we all have is we all have a GPS now in our phones that has an enormous amount of information. So in MapHead, Ken Jennings has a great point about how things are getting a little more complicated. And so he says, where on a map can you point to Al-Qaeda or Google or Walmart? Everywhere and nowhere. So this is kind of where we are right now with technology. Things are becoming so globalized and connected that it's bringing up some new and interesting questions. And so these are all some of the things that are on my mind as a map maker and things I ponder. And as a map maker, I realize every line I put down matters and has an implication. And again, Ken Jennings says, the clarity and simplicity of the lines on a map make them powerful symbols. And I see that a lot in my work with the decisions I make or where I might draw a disputed boundary or the language I use to label things in. It all matters. So I think it's, in my humble opinion as a mapmaker, geography is one of the best ways to study everything because everything is tied to place. When you study a map, you're studying history, you're studying the weather, you're studying culture, you're studying sociology, and there's so much good stuff when you just sit and stare at a map for a while.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.